Hello and good day, everyone. Kevin Finkel here with another episode of Magic, the First Pioneers. This is a podcast all about the Pioneer format, keeping our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world Pioneer. I'm joined by my co-host, as well as by a special guest, if you guys want to introduce yourselves.
My name is Ryan Schwenk. I'll go first. I am the Japan hobbyist out of the Tokyo area of Japan, and our guest is...
Hi, I'm Thomas Fletcher, and I'm from Florida. So
other than from being from Florida playing Magic, you are a judge, you're a bit of a writer, you know, a bit of a just aspiring Pioneer player.
Yep. I've been a judge for almost 2 years now, actually. Got that at GP Orlando 2 Augusts ago.
What set was that at the time, 2 years ago, when you became a judge?
That was M19.
Okay.
That GP Orlando was actually the tournament that Nexus of Fate went crazy and was like 40% meta share or something. I didn't participate in that tournament. I was playing side events on Lantern being that guy.
Gotcha.
So
it's a fun one. So I was going to say, when we bring a guest on, usually what we'll often say is, hey, if you guys have a fun topic that you want to talk about, feel free to come on our show. So we talked to Thomas and we said, hey, what do you want to talk about? And he really said, Planeswalkers. So we want to talk Planeswalkers this week, and that's really what our topic's going to dive into, you know, really looking at the impact that Planeswalkers as a card type really have on Pioneer, looking at some of the most impactful ones now and hopefully in the future.
Yep. Planeswalkers are an integral part of Pioneer, and a lot of them see play and have seen play and will continue to see play, of course. So
I just
want to break down some of the best.
I was going to ask you guys, do you think that Planeswalkers are more important now than they were at the start of the format in Pioneer?
Technically, no. I would say no.
They're like weaker, would you say now, or
I would say Oko's yes for a couple gone. Reasons. Oko's gone. This Healy combo's gone, and that was very much a Super Friends deck. So I think that's my jump to answer is no, we don't have that deck anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think right this moment they're a little bit less prominent than what we've seen before because you can't play a lot of them if you've got Lurrus in your deck. So that makes them a slightly worse.
Yeah, right at the end of Theros Beyond Death, there were a lot of Planeswalkers seeing play, but right now it's gone down a little bit, but there still are quite a lot of Planeswalkers seeing play.
So would you say that Planeswalkers' current role is more of a support role than actually taking, you know, center stage in the decks like they did before?
There are some fully Planeswalker decks. I don't think it's either or.
I would say that there's a couple of support ones, but most of them are pretty center stage.
Okay.
All right. Now, I had a different question when I was thinking about kind of where to go with this topic is, would you say that Pioneer is the most Planeswalker-based format of constructed formats?
Good question.
Because, you know, when I think about Legacy, Modern, they have more powerful cards from before when Planeswalker existed, whereas Pioneer, the whole time that it's existed, is really at the same power level, so more of the Planeswalkers are among the playable cards, was my thought.
What do you think, Thomas?
I would say that the Planeswalkers in Pioneer, just there's so many of them compared to Modern or Legacy, that are above that floor to get into the format. It helps that we just had War of the Spark roughly a year ago, and that just dropped 37 Planeswalkers on us. So a large chunk of those were playable. 37 Walkers is about 2.5 years worth of Planeswalkers all at once. So,
I was gonna ask, do you guys think that more Planeswalkers are seen in the Pioneer format? Because when you go backwards, like into Modern, really the test if it's Modern playables, if it's 3 mana or not. or has some insane ability if it's 4 mana, but you pretty much only play 3 mana Planeswalkers. Would you agree or disagree with that statement?
I mean, yes and no. I don't think that there's anything wrong with... I mean, are you saying that Jace Mind Sculptor is just that many, that powerful at 4?
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful.
Yeah, Jace, the Mind Sculptor, there's Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, that's of course seen play in Modern.
Really?
And there's quite a few other ones that aren't 3 that do see play in Modern. But
yeah, you've got Corner Cases like Karn.
But as a... Well, I guess in Tron as well, they got Ugin, right? Four.
Yeah, Karn Ugin.
Yeah. But it seems... I would say like the...
Karn Liberated is a 3 mana walker.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking, Karn. Which one are we talking?
It's a 3 land walker.
Okay. 3 land walker?
Tron.
Okay, yeah. And Tron, yeah. I was going to say, I would state that in Modern, the average Planeswalker is at a lower CMC than that in Pioneer.
Yeah, I would definitely say that.
Sure, that's reasonable, yeah.
Alright, so let's talk Pioneers. Let's talk Planeswalkers and Pioneer. I made a top 10 list of what I thought were the top 10 most, I guess, influential or impactful Planeswalkers in the format. So do you guys want to go over our top 10 list and see if we agree or disagree?
Yeah, I've got a top 10 list as well, although I've got a lot of, honorable mentions or cards I want to mention.
Yeah, so do I. So,
well,
can we start with a couple 10. Ground rules?
Yeah.
I want to see, are we including the 1.5 Planeswalkers that are banned?
I'm not.
I am not. I'm going to stick those in honorable mentions.
Okay, so yeah, we'll talk about Oko and Saheeli, but we don't need to include them on our top 10. Okay.
Another thing that I wanted to ask about as far as like... our top 10 list, how did you go about making your top 10 list? Like, what were, like, your criteria when you were choosing these 10? Like, for me, I was pretty much looking at how much they see play, as well as just, like, are they able to, like, take over the game and win it by themselves, and just, like, overall power level, not so much a synergy, I guess you could say.
Yeah, for me, longevity mattered a little bit. Like, is it really good in a lot of different metas? Definitely some of my top ones are, whereas I've got some cards like, Chandra for a while was one of the biggest cards in Pioneer, but it really dropped off when the deck that it was played in stopped being good because of the meta.
Mm-hmm.
What, Chandra? Torch?
Torch of Defiance, yeah.
Yeah. So how about you, Thomas? When you were making this top 10 list, like, what were your criteria? How did you choose?
I looked at playability, just powerful effects, and what happens when they hit the battlefield. Mm-hmm. Also, like Kevin, looking at the longevity of it a little bit, there definitely are some on my list that are on there partially because of the current metagame,
because they stick around.
Longevity, like, they may not be there as much in the future, or if the meta shifts, it could be gone.
Okay,
I guess next question, as far as ground rules, are we including the Flipwalkers? Because I know we were shaky on that when we were talking about this.
Yeah, I'm fine with that if you guys want to talk about them.
Ooh, well, maybe I gotta do 12 then, but yeah, we can find a way for them in there.
Because
we can talk about them.
I mean, there's really only one to talk about, to be honest. But okay.
I mean, currently Nissa is seeing play. So 3 mana Nissa is currently seeing play.
But is it top 10 seeing play?
That's hard to say. It's just such a fun pet card of mine.
Yeah.
Probably without the Yorian interaction right now, wouldn't be seeing much play.
Mm-hmm.
Bolas has seen play.
Yeah.
I think, at least.
Ooh, yeah, he is technically a flip card as well.
Oh yeah, the,
but I don't know if that's top 10 either. So,
all right. Well, let's have Thomas go first, if that's okay with you, Kevin, since he's our guest.
Absolutely.
So, what was your top 10 pick and why?
My first one is Domri, Anarch of Bolas. And that's at 10. Let me just make sure I got this right and didn't confuse Chaosbringer and Anarch.
So the 3-mana Domri, okay, that gets +1/+0, right?
Yes, it's the war one.
And he has a fight effect?
What it does is 1 red-green, it enters at 3 loyalty, creatures you control get +1/+0.
Mm-hmm.
+1, add red or green creature spells you cast this turn can't be countered. And then -2, target creature you control fights target creature you don't control.
Mm. Okay, so why did you choose?
This card, in lower to the ground, the red-green decks, stompy-wise,
mm-hmm,
is very good. The +1/+0 can pack a whole lot more damage through. Situationally, right now, because of Obosh, that +1/+0 can really crank through a lot of damage. The adding of mana also means that this can be dropped turn 3, and then turn 4 it can get Obosh out, even if your Llanowar Elves or something died in that deck, and your Obosh is now uncounterable. The fight also can pretty easily clears the way for your creatures to attack in. It's just a really powerful card for these stompy decks or zoo type decks to play.
I didn't even consider him in an Obosh deck, to be honest. That's really, because, you know, he's not doing damage, but still, he gives that +1/+0, and then, you know, when they fight, they do double damage if you have Obosh in play. So I think that, yeah, that sounds like a really good fit.
Standard, the Obosh decks are kind of doing that, the Heraldic Banner, because none of them are really quite in the colors of Obosh.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, since it's in the colors of the main Obosh deck in Pioneer, is quite powerful. Plus, it was seen play before Obosh was even a thing.
In Pioneer, what red-green decks are there right now? Like, what are they playing? Is it pretty much just the standard deck with Cleave?
Well, no. If it's an Obosh deck, it's not Cleave, but your red-green Stompy.
Yeah, it's the red-green Stompy with Llanowar Elves, Elvish Mystic, into Lovestruck Beast, Steel.
Goblin Rabble Master.
Oh! So.
Yeah, Rabble Master, Steel Leaf.
Nice.
Coco.
Nice.
Coco. Oh, I guess you can't do Coco with Obosh, but they've caught Coco. But,
that was the version before it had Obosh. Was that one was like a Coco and Embercleave kind of deck? Yeah, before then.
I actually had Domri in my honorable mentions. I didn't feel like I was good enough for the top 10, but I thought it was good. What about you, Kevin?
He was on my list because he has definitely seen play. He's always been a little low for me. At first I was like, oh man, this guy won't see play if the older Domri's not seeing play, but. Yeah, really, neither of them. He's a little bit better, but neither of them sees a ton of play.
Okay.
Yeah, the older Domri took over standard for a bit while it was there. That red-green deck throughout that time period that just had Thraktusk and Polukranos or Hellrider, depending on which side of Return to Ravnica that deck was. It was just
absurd.
Good all the way through from Innistrad to Theros, and Domri was a huge part of that. But this one I think is a bit better than that one.
What'd you have for your 10, Kevin? You want to go next?
Ooh, so, you know, I was bouncing around for a little bit, but I'm going to go with 10 being Liliana the Last Hope, and that's incredible for me that she's so far down, but she, you know, she was trending downwards before this latest season. And Lurrus really, really cut into her market share, simply doing kind of what she wants to do, but better. But, you know, that's still a card that will have longevity in the format. I think will come back in some form later on as a very powerful card. But, you know, it's a grindy card, it's a mid-range card, and doesn't have the right kind of home right this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But really cool card, very powerful. You know, format warping, when it's good, it really, really punishes any kind of X1 deck. And just is able to grind, and you can almost play it in creatureless decks sometimes.
Do you want to read what it does for people that maybe don't
know? Yeah, so that's a 3-mana. I can +1 to give a creature -2/-1 until your next turn. Can minus -2 to mill the top two cards of your library.
Return a creature.
Bring back any creature from your graveyard to your hand, and it can -7 to make an emblem, which pretty quickly wins the game. It makes like two zombies the first turn, and then 2 plus the number of zombies you control every other turn.
And
it enters at 3.
Did you have her on the list at all, Thomas?
I do have her on the list. What but number? It's only at 9, so it's not much higher.
I had her at 5, actually. Just because, like you were saying, the longevity, and like she's going to be around forever. She's a 3-mana walker, and she has a lot of different types of decks she can fit into, as far as, like, you know, she can fit into a zombie deck, she can fit into Sultai Delirium, you know, when any other creature-based, you know, graveyard deck, she could, you know, as a sideboard card, as a mainboard card, anything, so.
Yeah, so do you guys know, like, why did she stop seeing play in Mono Black Aggro, for example? Was she just too slow in that deck?
Probably.
I think that's what happened.
And then, yeah, we really need black-based control, I think, is where Lily'd be a little bit better.
Like Esper control or something, or Grixis.
I think she's typically best in mid-range type decks. If you look at where she's seen play in other formats, it's always the kind of BGX decks. Just you need to have some creatures for the recurring to be valuable, and you need to also have stuff to supplement the -2/-1 or creatures to push through where that debuff matters. Whereas control, like, she's good, but she also takes 4 turns to
ultimate.
5 turns to ultimate, actually.
I wonder if there's any Yorion decks that can play. Like, I like the idea of, you know, -2ing and bringing back your Yorion and then blinking her so she goes back to full loyalty.
Yeah, you could do that. That's interesting.
I don't know why you would do that over. I don't know why you would do that over Tamiyo, though. Because Tamiyo's just Simic and has Eternal Witness on it.
You guys are going to hate me for my top 10.
We'll have fun. So, you know, I mean, for you guys who are not familiar with the show, like, I tend to be a bit more spiky, and Ryan tends to be a little bit more of the Timmy you know, fun
so
things here.
This is, like, King of the Timmies, Gideon, Ally of Zendikar. I don't know if you guys probably didn't have him in your top 10, I'm guessing.
He did not make my top 10, no.
But he got very close.
Yeah, I feel like he said, he's really close. I could have put him at 11 or 12. I just feel this is more like muscle memory, I guess, or meta memory, you could say. He was such a huge part of, you know, of Frontier when that was a thing. And, you know, in Pioneer, he was really good for that, you know, for the first couple months. And, yes, now there's better Gideons, better kind of like aggro walkers. But as far as, I guess, because of the combo decks kind of taking control, like blue-black, what was it? Blue-black Inverter and stuff like that. The other Gideon became more of a namesake, you know, the Gideon of the Trials. But I still like Gideon. I think he's going to, you know, see a comeback. He still sees plays like a 1 or 2 of in a lot of decks. He can win the game by himself. He protects himself well. And he's great in aggro decks or mid-range decks where he can, like, ultimate, give everybody that +1.
I think it's funny, actually. I kind of feel like he is weakened by the fact that Planeswalkers are so good in Pioneer. Like, he's really at his strongest when he can be the top end for your deck and control has a hard time answering him. But in a format where every deck is ready to answer Planeswalkers, it's a lot less impactful, you know, just playing him and maybe making a 2-2, getting answered by Hero's Downfall, Murderous Rider, Assassin's Trophy, or what have you, does not feel as good.
I don't know if I would say he's worse because of Planeswalkers. The +1 still is a pretty hefty beat stick that swings
the
into
five,
a
five.
Walker, and the tokens aren't a joke. I think him and White Weenie is still quite good. He's definitely kind of been ousted by Heliod for the moment.
Yeah.
But really, compared to any of the other, like, top-end Weenie Planeswalkers, like, you have Warajani, you have any, like, M19 or M20 Ajani, or quite a few
he's the
others to choose from. He's just the best of them to lord over with the emblem and buff your team through, and also just be a beat stick. He can crew the only, part of Kieran
the only 4-drop. I do think he takes the 4-drop spot, or at least used to. Maybe the 1 4-drop that's really replacing him is Luris plus a 1-drop.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, companions...
Warp
I don't
want to
go into that at the moment.
This is a Pioneer...
We've talked about him a lot on the
this
podcast.
This is a Planeswalker podcast this week, so yeah. Number 9, then. Kevin, you want to do this one?
Sure. So, I don't know if you guys had this on your list at all, but I feel like this... past my threshold to be an honorable mention, and this is the War of the Spark Ashiok.
I almost had him on my list.
That is so on my list, but I'll surprise you where it's at later.
So this is the 3-mana Ashiok, blue-black, habit colors, your opponent... What is the passive? Your opponent
can't search
libraries, and it can -1 to... mill 4 from you or your opponent, and then your opponent exiles your graveyard.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been seeing play pretty consistently as just a cool, repeatable graveyard hate card. Does some of your own self-milling if you want to have self-mill, and it's not, it doesn't exile both players' library or graveyard, so it's good in that way.
Or I guess I'll share where I put this. I put this all the way up at 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I was considering putting it higher than that, maybe at 4. It's just that out of all the graveyard hate options in Pioneer, it's amazing.
It does more than just hate graveyards.
Yeah, it definitely does more than hate graveyards. It almost has the full-blown Gravedigger's Cage on it because of the libraries plus the grave hate. You can mill yourself as well, and it will still just exile your opponent. So if you want to use it that way.
Now, I...
The amount of things that the static hits right now and in the past is... and will probably continue to hit is a lot, but it's just one of those 3 of sideboard walkers as grave hate and is fantastic.
It stops them as searching. What is it like stopping? What is it hurting the most? Yeah, of course it's great right now. The exile effect is good against like Luris and whatnot. But like as far as the search effect, the static effect, what does that hurt the most? Because we don't really have ramp decks, and we don't really have.
We have some ramp decks that don't hate having that ability.
Stopping less now, but it... So, actually, does this stop Luka? Let's see.
Because I actually had Ashiok at 7 on my list, and then I'm like, it's not as good as it was before, so I ended up dropping it off my top 10.
Okay.
So, it's generally just the amount of sideboard play it has.
Yeah, yeah.
Continue to see that gave it so high on my end.
Yeah.
It's just
so Ryan,
good.
What did you have at your 9?
Well, my 9, again, you guys probably don't even have this card on there at all.
Real quick, one more note on Ashiok. It's also just the hybrid blue-black that so many decks can play it as a hate card.
Yeah.
So, there is that part.
And I think also with Ashiok, there's a lot of black and blue decks in general in the format right now, and that's why it's so popular and why it's so good. So my number 9 is Vivian, Arcbar Ranger, the new one from M20. So again, you guys probably didn't have her on the list at all, I'm guessing.
Well, not even the newest Vivian, actually.
I have her on the list, but she's way higher.
Oh, really? The Arcbar Ranger. Okay, so I like her because, of course, Hardened Scales. Hardened Scales is not really that great of a deck right now, but you know, when it does hit the meta in the right place, she's a very powerful card in that deck. So her +1 is to give 2 counters on something, and then they gain trample, which is what you want to be doing in Hardened Scales. Her -3 is she deals damage. Sorry, target creature you control deals damage equal to its power, so it fights another. It doesn't even fight another creature, I think. Yeah, it just it's
yeah,
one way.
It just deals damage to creature or planeswalker.
Which is amazing. And then the -5, and this, the -5 saw a lot of play back when Mono Green devotion was a thing before that got banned. The the super mana producing
Wayland of London's.
Yeah. So number five, you may choose a creature card you own from outside of the game, reveal it, and put it into your hand. So this seems like this could have like a lot of play in the future if we're talking about companions. I know I said we weren't going to talk about companions, but if you have like one companion in your sideboard as your companion, and then you have an extra one, you can grab that with her later on, which is kind of sneaky.
I kind of want to talk about her up where I have her, so I don't want to say anything quite yet, because I have a lot to say about Vivian.
I'm annoyed that I didn't put her on my list, because I don't know if you remember, Ryan, but for the longest time I was raving about this card.
Yeah.
And you, especially when we had Matt on the podcast, as our third host, is, you know, he was just like, no, the card's not good. And, you know, at the time I wasn't seeing play. I'm like, no, this card will be really good in scales. You guys got to try
it. And it's better than Voice of Zendikar now. And it's, I would rather have her really than Voice of Zendikar. I think.
That's iffy, but maybe, yeah.
I'll add notes on her when. I mean, do you want to her?
Yeah, where did you have her? You want to go next then, Thomas? Where did you have Vivian?
Well, he said he wanted to talk about her when he gets to that number. So why don't you go with your number eight, Thomas?
Yep, my nine was Liliana the Last Hope.
Okay,
so my eight's kind of, I have it split because I really can't separate these two from each other. I have Gideon of the Trials and Jace, Architect of Thought at 8. And the reason they're here is because, together at least, is that Gideon of the Trials and Jace in control decks, Gideon stops a combo like Thassa's Oracle, but it really doesn't touch many other combos. But then also, if the meta is going tall, Gideon is really good because you can plus on Emrakul or something. But if the meta is going wide, Jace Architect of Thought slots in over Gideon of the Trials, which Trials didn't see play at all before Thassa's Oracle happened, and it was Architect of Thought, and then they switched places, and I could see them pretty easily switching places back again, depending on where the meta goes.
Interesting.
Yes.
So I also had Gideon of the Trials on my list. Maybe my list is a little bit too focused on what is really good right now, but I had Gideon of the Trials at number three because it's seeing so much widespread play at the moment. And I didn't hate it as Gideon. I think that without the combo decks, maybe it would be fighting for a spot with Black Blade or with the 4-mana one. But right now it really does earn its home. I did not have Jace on my top 10.
Yeah.
Right now, it's quite good. In case you forgot what Jace Architect of Thought was.
Minus two to all creatures for the plus, I believe?
No, it's minus... Creatures attack you.
Okay.
Attack
next. And then Factor Fiction?
Plus one until your next turn whenever a creature an opponent controls attacks. It gets minus one, minus zero until the end of turn. Minus two is... Factor Fiction for three cards. And the minus eight is for each player.
You know, if you're going to explain what Jace is, you might as well explain what Factor Fiction is. So you reveal three cards, your opponent chooses, puts them into two piles, and you put one in your hand, one on the bottom of your library.
Yep. And then the minus eight is for each player. Search that player's library for a non-land card and exile it. Then that player shuffles his or her library. You may cast those cards without paying their mana costs. That alt's decent, but it's really just the plus one in control for blanking go-wide metas compared to the go-tall that Gideon is.
Yeah, I don't see...
Gideon definitely...
I was going to say, I don't see like control doing that well, though, in the current meta, though. Is it? I mean, is it doing really well? Is it like... really popular?
My list is partially current meta and partially past.
Yeah, because I could see it doing well when people aren't ready or they're not prepared for like a good control deck, when like the meta becomes too too stiff and not fluid. But
I think it's just if the meta is going much wider than it is mm-hmm. right now, because mm-hmm. right now getting the trials between Thassa's Oracle
yeah.
and blanking something like Emrakul
yeah.
or just any other big thing is doing better.
So
for me, the reason I didn't include that Jace is really that I feel like there are other 4-mana walkers that are kind of just there for value. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it kind of competes with Narset, kind of competes with Nahiri, kind of competes with the other Narset, you know,
the 3-mana, if you're yeah.
green, maybe. Like, there's a decent number of, like, 4-mana walkers that are just there for value, and there's not a hard best one of them, I feel like. I felt like there used to be kind of this problem at 5, is that there was, you know, Obnixilis and a bunch of Obnixilis clones and no clear best 5-mana walker. I think that's mostly changed now.
That has definitely mostly changed.
So, getting into the trials, number 8 for you, you said, Thomas, right?
Yeah, Gideon and Jace.
And then, what was getting into the trials for you?
I had him at 3.
I had him at 2.
Okay.
I just thought he's become so popular. He stops so many combo decks, and he stops aggro decks, and he's just. I mean, you can play him, you know, main deck in mono white devotion as well to take, you know, to get rid of any problem cards that.
And they do, yeah.
That you know that deck might have. So yeah. So I just like him all around.
I didn't put him higher just because I thought he was so meta-dependent
mm-hmm.
currently, which I don't know what your all's... Yeah, getting into the trials does go in mono-white mm-hmm. as well, so it is one more deck than... well, I guess it's not necessarily one more deck than Architect, because Fires and other stuff yeah. have played that, but I was thinking more of they're tied together in control.
Yeah. All right.
My number 8.
What do you have for 8?
So my number 8, I had Jace Wielder of Mysteries just because of the combo deck, because of Inverter.
That's right where I had him as well. Is you know, I felt like I had to include him just because he, you know, despite it not being a deck before Thassa's Oracle, he does largely make that deck possible.
Yeah.
He's kind of the cleaner win con. He does see a little bit of play outside of that as a value card, as a combo win.
Yeah.
I didn't put him on there just because I thought he was too meta-dependent. Mm-hmm. Also kind of thought we were going to talk about him anyways because someone would have it.
That's fair. Yeah, that's definitely fair.
Okay, so number 7. Who's
well,
next?
Do we want any more thoughts on Jace Wielder? It is the... Yeah. He is Labman compared to Thassa's Oracle being a one-shot. That deck has definitely become kind of like a Valakut type deck of Pioneer, where it's that longer game combo that is really hard to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you can only stop it with counter spells reasonably. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a lot harder to get rid
Wielder
of.
Wielder also Oracle. Just draws cards and
mm-hmm.
things.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if he's harder to get rid of than Oracle. Oracle's work is done the moment it enters the battlefield.
Yeah.
But he can be hard to get rid of for a lot of decks.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe the only other one I could have thought of, maybe like Ugin could have been in that spot.
Mm.
Oh, wait, actually I'm realizing I'm missing one on my list, so maybe... You know what, I'm just going to replace mine entirely right now. I'm going to say... No, okay, but let's move on.
Okay.
I'm just realizing that I'm missing one on my list and I need to fit in here somewhere.
So it'll be 0.5 something.
Yeah, I'll have a 4.5 or something.
So you guys went first for 10 to 9. I don't think I went first yet, so can I do number 7?
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so I chose Chandra, Torch of Defiance. Again, this is more kind of meta memory than maybe actually being good in the current format. I still think she's a very solid card. You know, red decks are pretty much focusing on the red white now with Luris, so they're not playing that sideboard Chandra anymore. But being able to get you card advantage, being able to, you know, deal damage to a creature, and also winning the game. You win the game when you ultimate her, basically. The 5 damage to any target.
You could win the game when you plus her. because of the pings off the top.
Yeah, yeah, you could do that as well. So,
so she almost made my list. I was debating between her and Domru for number 10. So a story about Chandra. I think at one point in Magic, she was the best planeswalker mm-hmm. of all of them when she came out. Mm-hmm. And I think that held until they did the damage redirection mm-hmm. change.
Mm-hmm.
Because when she used to be able to mow down planeswalkers, she was the most nutty walker ever.
Yep.
Hey, this is totally random, but how would you guys feel if they changed it again that when you deal damage to all opponents, it also does damage to their planeswalkers?
Like all planeswalkers and opponents?
Each opponent.
Yeah, the ones that specifically say each opponent.
Possibly. Planeswalkers, to them, game-wise, are kind of like another planeswalker opponent, helping yeah. you since you're a planeswalker. But I don't know if that gets too crazy with, like, I was going to say Earthquake, but that's nowhere near this format.
Yeah.
But those Doom? Types.
I don't know.
Yeah, I would like that. Cards. I think the format would have to get to a point where, like, planeswalkers are a really big problem and they need to have, like, some kind of, you know, effect that, a retrospective effect instead of making it just on one new card that does it to all planeswalkers. Because, you know, otherwise, you're just going to run into problems where people aren't going to have this card, they can't play this card. But if you give it to all these other cards that say damage to opponent, then now you have this huge pool of cards that can deal with problematic planeswalkers. That's my opinion.
Especially when almost all of them could hit planeswalkers anyways.
Yeah.
The thing that happened was if it targeted the player, it got changed to target player or planeswalker.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If it could target creatures or players, it got changed to any target.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it got changed to each opponent or like target opponent or something like that, where it was for the controller of, you couldn't redirect that anymore. Yep. So that was only at players.
Okay, so 7. You guys didn't have Chandra on there, I'm guessing, or you did?
I talked about her. She just missed my list.
Okay.
She barely missed my list.
Okay. So yeah. What about you guys? What did you have for number 7?
So I just had to do a little bit of changing around on my list. So I went with Jace Vryn's Prodigy as 7 for me.
Hmm.
I put him on solely because of Transform Walkers. I just didn't put on here, but go ahead.
Yeah, I've had a little bit of a love-hate relationship with him. Like, I think for quite a while, I was like, you know, he's just not good enough. He gets killed all the time. But the raw power's there. And I think that longevity, he will find more homes than what he currently has. You know, as color splashing becomes a little bit easier, we might be able to see him in things like a Humans deck or a Coco deck or, you know, a little bit more places than where we're currently seeing him. So that's something that I think will give him some more longevity in the format than what he has.
Yeah, I just think of, like, Fatal Push and all these other removal spells, and I don't
think... he loves casting those in the graveyard.
Well, I mean, he's a big target.
I just remember back in when we all were doing Frontier,
mm-hmm.
he never saw any play
yep.
because of his Kanta, and Wild Slash was so prominent out of Atarka that everything killed him, and he didn't do anything the turn that he came down.
Mm-hmm.
But in Pioneer, what's really changed is,
well, graveyard deck push
is a little bit less seen, or it's sees less
Fatal
play.
Push is a little worse because it can't hit threes.
And there's
I would say the biggest thing that's changed is that there's no Smuggler's push. Copter.
Yeah.
Smuggler's Copter had such a target on it that you absolutely had to be able to interact with a 2-drop. And Jace really suffered from that. You know, he was pretty much fully replaced with Searchlight's Kanta, maybe Narset later on.
Copter also, yeah, in some decks replaced him. But it's really just been decks that... The Sultai Delirium deck just really wants mm-hmm. a creature doing that.
I mean, it adds and to Delirium, and it gives them yep. stuff in the graveyard.
And uses your toolbox graveyard.
Yeah.
And before, there wasn't much reason to play blue, and now it's Euro and other stuff, and there's
mystical disputes.
Now, he just barely missed my top 10 list, but I'm super happy that he's seeing the play, because I bought a bunch when they were like $20. So let him keep going up. I'm happy.
So my, or are we?
Is that everybody seven? That
looting into get back a spell is good. Plus, as plus one does slow things down quite well.
Yeah, the minus two effect.
Oh. But my seven.
Yeah. What was your seven? Yeah, I was gonna ask.
My seven is Teferi, Hero of Dominaria.
Okay. So why is he
inside? I have a feeling you all have it a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Only a little bit higher.
But I think it often takes third wheel now and those decks to a couple of other walkers. And it does see play in pretty much only control. It's not like some of the other blue white or those other color walkers that might see play in like fires or Bant or something.
Niv-Mizzet.
Niv-Mizzet. It really only sees play in control.
I mean, granted, fires and Bant.
Granted, it's one of the best control finishers.
Yeah.
Well, and also just plussing to draw and untap lands to hold up mana. He's effectively a three mana walker. The minus is so comprehensive on permanent types that it hits, plus the card is gone for several turns, and that ult is backbreaking. Plus he can tuck himself over and over again if you want to do that. But
for me, right this minute, you talk about him being a control finisher, but that's actually where I think right this moment he's been a little bit lackluster. I think that's also the reason why I left off, you know, the 6-mana Chandra, and I left off the 6-mana Elspeth, is that right now I haven't liked how slow, very slow control Planeswalker finishers are. I felt like you do need to have a slightly better finisher, especially in a world where every deck has a little bit of Lurrus or Yorion or combo to kind of finish out the edge. So like trying to win over 12 turns with a Teferi doesn't feel quite as good when people either have ways to grind and come back or they have combos to just gut you out of the game.
When was Teferi like the boogeyman? Because there was like a meta, there was a season where just like, oh my god, this is the worst card ever.
I think that standard? Was after...
Is it standard? Was...
I think it was after... in standard it was probably Nexus, because that GP Orlando that I was talking about,
but
he was the win con. He wasn't necessarily the win con, but he was in there, plus the blue white decks were using him as a win con over Approach was legal, but, and they weren't even using Approach anymore. They were just Teferi tucking to win.
But Nexus was also in Pioneer for a short time, right?
Yeah, that was probably also the part that Teferi Hero was pretty bad, because it was really after Oko got banned, but before Theros Beyond.
I want to say that Nexus was strong enough that the Wilderness Reclamation decks ended up being better than trying to do shenanigans with Teferi, but all right, well, why don't we keep on moving along here?
That was my number six, by the way.
Okay. That was also... I ended up pushing him to five while I was just doing some rearranging here.
So
I guess I'll go with my number six then, if that's where we are. So for my number six, I have the 4-CMC Vraska. So the 2/2, a green and a black. It can +2 sacrifice a creature if you want.
Or sacrifice permanent.
Any permanent if you want.
Yeah.
You gain a life and draw a card if you do. It can -3 to destroy anything 3 CMC or less, or it has an ult that if your opponent takes damage, they lose the game.
I remember right. No, it sets their life to 1. Because I was thinking yesterday, she's on there. She's like somewhere around 5-6 for me, and I completely blanked when I typed this up earlier today. So I'm happy that you... remembered her.
I mean, we're talking so much about how good three mana walkers are, and she likes to eat them. Yeah. So that's what she's really there for.
Is she seeing a lot of play though? I mean, is she in like the Sultai Delirium deck or?
Yeah, when the deck's good, she sees play in there. You know, here and there, I guess right now green black has mostly been like, you know, Luracy deck, so that doesn't quite work, but. I think longevity, the fact that three mana planeswalkers are so good, that this seems like a logical place to beat those.
Like
it's that she is a plus two on her, which is really hard to get rid of or her then. Like, that plus two is sacrificing another permanent you control, but you're drawing off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that minus three kills everything. It's just abrupt decay.
For me, like I she's in my top 15, but I feel like she's missing a deck. There's just not a deck that can take full advantage of her yet. That's why I didn't have her in my top 10.
I would also agree that Delirium definitely wasn't really able to take advantage of her. That deck does better than other walkers. It really wants Delirium's kind of more control-y for a mid-range deck, and she really wants a more traditional
Jund or
BGX deck.
Yeah, like a Jund or a rock deck or something good like that with a lot of good control and mid-range elements, but I don't feel like we have that right now in Pioneer.
Yeah, she wants a lower to the ground deck than Delirium is.
All right, Thomas, what do you have at number 6?
My number 6 is Narset, Parter Veils.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had her on. Now I removed her. Why do you have her at 6?
Narset, preventing you from drawing cards. 1. I have definitely accidentally activated Castle Locktwain or something with her out. And not weighted, but the can't draw cards is serious. 2, the minus for essentially an impulse is pretty comprehensive on card types that it can grab because it's non-creature, non-land. She can do it twice, but impulsing twice might as well be dig through time at that point. But she just goes in these decks as this must-remove thing that comes down and then ends up finding more things that are answers or must-removes. And throughout fires or some of the ramp decks or these Luka decks and various things, she's just always been good. And this is definitely hitting part on my list. That's good cards.
I was going to say, Kevin, did you have her on your list as well?
I had her at number 4, yes.
Okay, so what decks is she stopping these days? I don't see a lot of decks drawing a lot of cards other than Sultai Delirium. That's why I kind of had her on the list and they dropped her down to like 11 or 12.
So Yorion's been a big comeback for her because you tick her down, you know, you get 2 impulses, and then you Yorion blink her and get more.
Okay.
And also the fact that it's kind of more of a good thing, so once you've got an 80-card deck, you're looking for more of that, and she presides that consistency. So she's seen play main deck in the Yorion versions of Inverter, in plenty of the Fires decks, in maybe some of the blue-white control.
Okay. Because I was thinking...
Yeah, she's in control a lot because really the what card draw engines you're using falls off pretty fast.
And she's good in the mirror control matches as well, of course.
Yeah, I was just thinking like against like red white Luris, you know, or black white Luris, or like I guess against the black white auras it's pretty good because it stops the card advantage.
She does stop Time Raveler from drawing a card.
Time Raveler?
Yeah.
She stops Deferred that.
Time oh, yeah, yeah, card. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Don't want to talk Ryan, about what do you him. Have that,
so six was Teferi. Six was Teferi for me, so we can do 5.
Hero.
Yeah, Teferi, Hero of Dominaria at 6. So we already talked about that.
Just quick recapping, you know, I had Teferi, Hero of Dominaria at 5. I had Narset at 4. I had Gideon of the Trials at 3. So Ryan, I know you had Liliana at 5.
I had Liliana the Last Hope at 5.
Oh, you had Liliana at 5, Ryan.
I had Ashiok Dream Render at 5.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So it looks like we can skip 5.
Skip to 4
for you?
Yeah. So who wants to do 4? I can go 4 because I know you guys don't have this on the list.
Yeah, what do you got? What do you got that's weird?
Because you guys were hating on her, but I love Elspeth Sun's Champion. I think she's still a great finisher for White's like control decks. You know, 3 creatures a turn. Sorry, go ahead.
She kind of fell off towards 15. I think there's so many other walkers in that deck right now.
I mean, I could see her coming back like in Fires. You know, like if Fires, Jeskai Fires or something becomes a thing, or I just like it that she can protect herself and then she can win the game so much easier or more easily with like that ultimate effect and giving +2/+2 and flying to all of your creatures, especially if you're just
Jeskai Fires is a thing right now, but I do not like her in that deck. She wins the game far too slowly compared to something like a Cavalier or Kenrith.
Okay.
For me, that's the real reason why I don't like her.
But, yeah, I just like her. Like I said, she puts down tons of bodies, stops people dead in their tracks, and, yeah, hard to get rid of. So that was my number 4.
It's traditionally a very good card, but I think a lot of walkers at lower CMCs have really kind of pushed her out, or is like a sometimes one of.
She's probably also better against mid-range decks, especially mid-range decks that can't answer Planeswalkers, and I feel like neither of those things are true.
I guess maybe I should have moved her
down.
She
was around there. I guess there was only Hero's Downfall that could really answer her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess if I had to change her for 4, I'd put her down to like 7 and just move all the other ones up then. There we go. Well, what about you guys? What was your number 4?
So... my number 4, I cheated again with another split, because I can't really separate either of these two. I have Vivian Archbow Ranger and Karn the Great Creator.
Yeah, why Karn?
It's that the stompy decks that are either green and pretty much any color at this point, because it's been blue before, it's been black, it's been red. And then scales on top of it. Almost all of them have had both of these two. And then a wishboard package of like 12 cards because of them. They both have a wish on them.
Yeah.
And it lets that stompy deck really just be able to grab out of their wish board so it doesn't take up any slots, main board, whatever the best threat or answer or anything is at the time. And both of them are the main, or I think a main reason of why Scales and Stompy have been doing so well in Pioneer.
Yeah, Karn was in, was it that mono green Planeswalker deck, right?
Yep. So is that Vivian.
Like you said, because of the
slots
wish thing.
In that deck.
Dang.
I definitely have that Karn maybe in my top 15, maybe like 13, somewhere around there, kind of for the same reasons.
Yeah. Did it make my top 10?
Also, more notes on that Vivian, the trample on there for Lovestruck Beast or something like that, plus the counters are good, and the fight clears the way. Karn doesn't necessarily clear the way as much, but like if you're in like a Scales mirror or something, you can stop ballistas and other things with Karn, so he still does come up. There's not as many artifacts at the moment. The Vivian's definitely better than the Karn at the moment, but I have trouble separating them just because they've essentially been the same, just in the same deck the entire time as Foros.
Did you have a different 4, Kevin?
I said my 4 was Narset. Okay. My 3 was Gideon of the Trials, if you've got a 3.
Yeah, should I go first, or do you want to go, Thomas? You're three.
Why don't you go, because Thomas was just talking.
Yeah, so, yeah, I have Nissa Who Shakes the World at number three. You guys probably don't have her on there. Again, it's a Timmy card.
Love. I have her at three.
I have her at number two.
Oh, really? Sweet.
I have her at three, so...
Nice. Yeah, I mean, she's just so powerful, making that 3/3 body, you know, it protects herself, all that extra mana that can't be, it can't be, how can I say, it can't be messed up by Damping Sphere, it can't be stopped. Like, you create that extra mana regardless, because the land itself isn't creating, it's her that's creating it. And then the ultimate, not so important, but... yeah, I mean,
you know, six loyalty walker makes her so hard for aggro to beat her down, especially with a 3/3 blocker with vigilance and making one every turn. You know, she pressers other planeswalkers well. She ramps up to big things for control decks. She's kind of a top end for aggro decks. Yep. You know, a lot of places she sees play, a lot of power in the card.
She's seen play in Sultai Delirium. Yep. She's also the other walker in that green X Stompy deck. Like Kevin said, those 3/3s. The mana doubling, though, when you have Ballista in this format, you could Crisis if you want.
Yep.
You could even just ramp up to Emrakul or Ulamog or Ugin.
Is it Ugin or
any
Ugin?
Of those?
I
would say Ugin, but.
And some people say Eugene.
I mean, I say that ironically, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
Eugene.
I love that name. Yeah.
So I have a short story with this Who Shakes the World.
Okay.
I pulled her in War of the Spark pre-release. The only time I got to drop her, my opponent immediately dropped Tomic and shot me down. And I didn't get to do anything with her.
Sad.
So, I walked away from pre-release going, like, is this card even good? I thought it was good. And then everyone found out a month later, like, oh, she's really good.
I feel that way. I think it was the first time I drafted RNA, if that was the right set, on Arena. I got Ethereal Absolution, pick one, pack one, and did not see it a single time. Just never once saw it. You know, I think I mulliganed it once from an opening hand and never saw it again.
Well, I'm happy everybody chose Nissa in their top three.
Yeah.
I have
You know, right now we don't really have the, like, trying to play a turn three Nissa decks, but I think that's still a totally viable strategy.
Mm-hmm. It was super popular during the Leyline of Abundance era.
That deck's still broken. One of the most powerful things. Like, if we do a no-ban list Pioneer, I think that's... still takes the cake, even a world of, like, you know, Yori and Saheeli and Luca, or not Luca,
Luris.
Yeah. Luris with Smuggler's Copter.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah,
it's still a land of abundance. That deck's too much.
Yeah.
That deck was obscene.
My number two was Gideon. I don't know, do you guys didn't have any other third?
I have a number two that I don't think either of you put on your list.
Yeah.
Sounds like probably not. What do you got?
Luca, Coppercoat, Outcast.
No, what? Luca's trash.
Sounds like a fun
he's
card.
He's not my honorable mentions, but that is very much like, right now, he's a very specific interaction. I don't think that is... You know, if I'm talking the longevity argument, he's nowhere near my list.
I don't think so. The reason is, while you're not really using him for the plus one... that still is XL the top three cards. It's essentially light up the stage as the plus one.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to play them until you're... or it's not even until the end of your next turn. It's as long as you control Luca Planeswalker.
Yeah.
So he sees a lot of cards. Two, that minus is much stronger than a regular Polymorph.
Yeah.
A normal Polymorph just goes until it hits the next creature in your deck. But due to it saying, so it reads, exile target creature you control, then reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a creature card with higher converted mana cost, and then put it onto the battlefield and the rest on the bottom. The higher converted mana cost means you can essentially choose a CMC for any of your creatures to just stop at, and you're going to cut off there. And then whatever big threat you want, you can just put it in your deck.
Yeah.
So, and so you could have a perfectly reasonable deck that stops at three and is just reflector maging or whatever, and then sack something, Emrakul, Ulamog, whatever, and that there's always going to be that threat of five mana, oops, Ulamog, and you're going to have this perfectly reasonable deck behind it. Whereas something like Marvel, you have to have so much energy and balance your deck right. So you... And he's literally just put in some Lukas, put in one or two things you're going to hit above your cutoff CMC, and you just get it.
So you like this as kind of like an alternative to Marvel, like a different way to build that type of deck without digging into all the energy.
Yeah, you don't dig into the energy, you don't dig into any of the randomness.
I did just see a deck with Marvel and Winota. And...
No, I think it's neat. I don't think it's number two neat, though.
I think it's going to continue to be dominant throughout its entire time. It's just an oops combo.
Yeah.
It's so low cost that you just, it's like four cards in your deck, maybe five cards.
I think as creatures get better, as creatures get better, this card will get better. As there's better targets other than like
I don't think
Ulamog or...
So the thing about those targets is this is one of those reasons why Marvel's so stuck in time, is that there really probably aren't going to be many better targets ever than that Emrakul or Ulamog. And there might be, but like it's unlikely, but just this being a guarantee for them, it's just so good.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to interject that I have been really enjoying Team Marvel right now. I don't know if I want to play it with Teferi around, but I do. The thing that I love most about that deck is casting the Teamer Ultimatum.
Because
it's just so good in that deck because it's all permanents and you just drop that.
Nice.
I don't actually know what the Teamer Ultimatum says.
That's the one you look at the top five cards of your library. You can put any number of permanents on them onto the battlefield and the rest into your hand.
So it's basically like an extra Marvel.
Other than like Harness Lightning, you just drop, you know, you can drop a Titan into play or an Ugin or another Marvel, you know, or if you just hit four lands and you're going to be hard casting your Titans.
So, question.
Was See the Unwritten just creatures?
Yeah, See the Unwritten is just creatures.
See the Unwritten was just creatures, and it was only one or two of the top eight.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Question, is Luka kind of fit in that same slot as Nahiri? As far as like being able to search up the
Nahiri
creature,
answers a lot of things. Nahiri kind of fits more where I'd see like the Jace, the four mana Jace we're talking about, Wielder of Mysteries or whatever.
Okay.
No, the
Architect of Thought.
Architect of Thought, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think this is just like an oops top end. I win.
All right, so that wraps up the episode, right, guys? We don't have to talk about number one.
Yeah, we all know who it is.
I think everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we all had a conclusion here. No collusion, we all came to Teferi, what is it, Time Raveler?
Yeah, Time Raveler.
Teferi Time Raveler. I can say something on this one.
I'm not going to talk about it. I hate blue, so you guys can talk about it.
He comes down. The minus essentially sets them back an entire turn, and you draw a card. So we just invalidated an entire turn.
It's a time walk.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Then on top of it, after he hits the battlefield, he can't be answered that turn. You gotta wait. And he also is just clearing the way for all these rampy things at the moment. I hate this card so much.
Yeah. It's not fun.
This card, when Pioneer was originally doing bans, he was one that I had on there and would still advocate to ban.
I was actually about to ask, like, you know, I like him. I don't think I hate him. Do you feel like he's pulling fun out of the format? Because I feel like at one point maybe I did feel that way, but I don't think right now that I feel like there's like, oh, I can't play this because of Teferi.
I don't know if it's that. I think it's just he warps the format so hard around himself that counter magic and other stuff just stops being good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, banning him does unleash a number of things like
control,
Marvel, like Torrential Gear Hulk, back a dig through time,
mm-hmm.
or even like Goblin Dark Dwellers with Kolaghan's Command. But I would rather have all of those things than deal with him.
Yeah.
Just the shut off answers, I can do my big Timmy ramp things and you can't stop me. Plus the time walk is...
So we are going late here. Yeah. Do you guys want a quick touch on any honorable mentions? Like, don't talk about why they're your honorable mention. Just want to say, like, hey, I got to give a shout out to blank. I think the only ones I've got is we didn't talk about Ugin, really.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about 3-mana Kaya. We didn't talk about the 5-mana Bolas. And...
Yep, that's on my list.
I feel like maybe 6-mana Sorin I wanted to mention just as being, in my opinion, either him or the new Garruk are the best of, like, the 6-mana walkers.
That's 6-mana Sorin.
Yeah, I agree with the Nicol Bolas and the Ugin. They were on my list for honorable mentions. Great cards, don't really have a spot right now.
I have a couple of kind of quick, more future oriented things,
like
then.
Potential. Yeah,
if you want to make any big guesses, especially as a guest, we would be happy to hear it.
So, Gideon Blackblade, I was kind of disappointed when War came out how he did. I don't think there's really a deck that wants him right now. I think the deck that really, really wants him is Selesnya Stompy. And the problem with Selesnya Stompy right now is there are so many cards at the 3-mana slot that you're trying to go turn 2 double white after doing a turn 1 green, and there really isn't a dork to support white mana like Avacyn's Pilgrim or Birds of Paradise or something. And compared to like Simic or Golgari that have the pain lands and the fast lands on top of it to support it. Yeah. Selesnya is also only looking at shocks and checks, essentially. So that turn 2 double white's really inconsistent. Red got around it by doing Coco, and it doesn't really have any double red things. But green-white, even the 3-drop things you want to hit, aren't Cocoable because they're not creatures. Mm. It's like Gideon Blackblade and History of Benalia and stuff like that.
I was gonna.
He also is probably the best Heart of Kieran. Yeah.
That's what I was gonna say. I was gonna say for vehicles. I mean, vehicles was good back in Frontier when we all played, but in Pioneer, vehicles just isn't that good.
We I could like humans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is a human when he comes into play, so he goes well with Thalia's Lieutenant.
Okay.
Yeah, I really think it's just Stompy wants him, and as soon as the mana gets there, he's going to see tons of play. I guess some quick ones are Davriel, like if we ever get Rack going. Mm-hmm. I know.
I'm trying Rack.
Ryan loves that deck.
Yeah, I love it.
He shows up as a nice sideboard card sometimes. I like him.
I'd rather... I mean, Shrieking Affliction is just better overall, I think.
Yeah. I think Wardoven hasn't seen its time yet. I think just the Thalia effect on it, plus the tap downs, that card is so underrated. And then I guess the last one I want to mention is Saheeli Rai.
Yeah.
If Felidar ever comes back, Saheeli Rai. I know Kevin and I were talking a little bit in DMs, where now is really the first time Yorion has made Felidar over Saheeli matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think a few other things. I think really Teferi Time Raveler's like the only thing holding Felidar back, though.
Well, just to clarify that point, what I was saying in DMs is that if they had banned, you know, a lot of people were kind of disappointed that they banned Felidar Guardian rather than banning Saheeli Rai, because Saheeli Rai is the broken part of it, whereas Felidar, like, you know, people would play around with it in a Cats deck or something else like that, just for fun. Right now, I feel like if Felidar were legal and Saheeli was not, it would see play in some kind of Yorian deck for sure. It would see play maybe in the Garuda decks.
Mm-hmm.
It would see play maybe in like a Vanifar deck, possibly.
What about Heliod as well?
Maybe.
The Yorian Heliod.
Some things about that combo compared to Inverter, though. Inverter is really hard to stop, whereas Saheeli, like, you can Ferocet on it, you can Authority of the Consoles, you can Manglehorn it because the tokens are artifacts. There's like five more other answers. You can Hushbringer it, and then also you can just kill it and kill either in response pretty easily. There's just way more windows to interact with it, whereas Inverter, pretty much as soon as the enter the battlefields happen, unless you countered it, there's no stopping it.
I wouldn't be against switching Saheeli and Felidar Guardian ban Saheeli and ban Felidar.
I don't know if you've looked back at that deck lately, but it's had 16 cards banned and could go on 20.
Nice.
It had Oath of Nissa, Once Upon a Time, Felidar Guardian, and Oko.
Wow.
And it would also run Veil of Summer, of course.
Oh, yeah. It also had Veil of Summer. So hilarious. It had 20 cards banned to the 7/5, essentially. And if Teferi Time Rattler or something also goes, you know.
Oath of Nissa is another one we are not bringing back in a Yorian
meta. Yeah, we talked about that before.
Oath of Nissa was just like Leyland of Abundance Devotion plus Planeswalker Mana Flex plus Kethis Looping.
Yeah.
It was way too much.
Well,
I don't know. That deck was Heart of Kieran backup with three mana walkers.
All right, we're really reaching the end of our time here, so I'm going to bring us to the end of our show. Guys, this was a lot of fun. Yeah. Hopefully you enjoyed us talking. You know, we weren't hardcore meta this time, but, you know, we still touched on it. You know, we like having guests, like I said, kind of at the beginning. If you guys ever have a cool idea, if you're a Magic personality just trying to reach out there, talk about some Magic while you're stuck in quarantine, please go ahead and reach out to us. You can get to me at MTG Pioneer on Twitter. You can find our subreddit, our Facebook. There's the Other First Pioneers Discord. A lot of good ways to reach out to us and talk magic about us anytime, any place.
Any shout-outs you have, Thomas? Any Twitter handles or anything you want to share? Any websites?
Or anything going on in your life?
I'm not really going to share as much social media other than Discord. You can always find me at ViperFang4 in either this podcast Discord, the Pioneer Discord, or the Untap Open League Discord. You might also see me in another like 20 Magic Discords.
Yes, he's all over Discord.
Discord.
You just shotgun all over Discord.
Yeah. Only like 90 servers or something. It's fine.
Yeah. And of course, you guys can find me on Twitter at Yoshwenky, YOSCHWENKY, and my website, www.thejapanhobbyist.com.
All right, thank you so much. Yeah, well, anything last there? We're cutting you off.
One quick thing. So, I remember back when you all started the Frontier podcast, and I helped with it for a few episodes from like 6 to 12-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been great seeing both of you stick with it.
I'm glad you stuck
both
with
of
us.
You all kind of came on. I know Ryan came on a bit later and Kevin was in the background on that old podcast from the start and then hopped in.
Thank you for remaining a fan for the whole time.
It's been 80 episodes, I think, between the two, or is it more than that?
Yeah.
More than that, I think. Where were we, like 70 on the one?
Well, we had a lot of doubles and stuff, so yeah.
Yeah, it's true, yeah. I appreciate that, yeah, and we're glad you've been listening. You know, we like listeners, and you have devoted ourselves to being a podcast just about the magic, just about the format, and that's what we've been sticking to.
Yeah. Hopefully when the meta gets
to both of you.
So hopefully when Paper Magic starts up again and the meta gets crazy, we can have you back on to talk more meta stuff.
Well, I'm a spirits player.
Okay.
Enjoying quite a bit of spirits before, and even still now with Gigantha. So.
I was going to say, you're rocking Gigantha? Yes, I'm glad
yes,
to see
I
that.
Yes, I am rocking Gigantha.
All right, well, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
All right, that's going to wrap up our show here, guys. Thank you so much for joining us, Thomas. Thank you again, Ryan, for being my co-host. And for all listeners, we thank you as well. This is the First Pioneers Podcast. We keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. Signing off.